Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our guest this week is Mark Shanker, an artist who has drawn on his own family background as an inspiration for his book, Traces of Sefarad, Etchings of Judeo-Spanish Proverbs. You can see the etchings and order the book on Mr. Shanker's website, where you can also see other work that he has done. We're including a link on this page. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Oh, thanks for interviewing me.
And first, before we get into the details about the book, I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about your own background, your family background, your professional background, just briefly.
Okay. I grew up in East New York, Brooklyn. My mother's maiden name was Pichon, and we lived in an area that was settled in the early part of the 20th century by Sephardic Jews from Salonika. My grandparents were from Salonika, and they arrived in the United States in 1917. And my mother was brought up in the same neighborhood, right across from a synagogue on Malter Street. My aunts lived there, my great aunts lived there, my great uncles lived there, my cousins lived there, and so every week our family got together and everyone spoke Ladino, and we had these parties, and it was like crazy. And a lot
of fun. That's nice, though. That's really nice to have an extended family that gets together every week.
Well, I have to be honest with you, it wasn't always my great aunts and great uncles, but it was all my cousins and all my aunts and uncles. And they were very demonstrative people, so it was very hard to say anything unless you got up and sort of acted it out. So it was very competitive. And most of my uncles and aunts, with the exception of one, were born in the United States. Mary was born in Turkey, Greece at that time.
So your generation didn't speak Ladino, I take it?
My generation didn't. My mother's first language was Ladino.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would all get together, and my mother's generation thought my grandparents were like anachronism because they were living very much the way Jews lived in Turkey and even before that in Spain.
In what way?
Some of the customs and things that they practiced go back hundreds and hundreds of years, even as far as medieval Spain. I can give you an example, for instance. Like every Friday night, my grandfather would have, all the children would be sitting at the table. They were very, very poor because, of course, my grandparents spoke no English and they had no skills. My grandfather couldn't even, like, write his name. He signed his name with an X. Mm. So they were very poor. And what they would do is take an egg and they would cut it up into six or seven parts. And each child would get one section of the egg and kiss my grandfather's hand. And my uncles and aunts thought like that was almost like blasphemous because Friday night you're supposed to be thanking God for the food you're receiving. And here my grandfather was having them go through this ritual of thanking him. So in the research I did, you know, on Sephardic culture, I found that it was a very common practice in medieval Spain, especially among the Muslims. When the father walked into a room, the children bowed and kissed his hand as a sign of respect. But, of course, my uncles and aunts didn't understand that at all, and they thought it was totally an anachronism of, you know, some sort of patriarchy that was no longer relevant to 20th century New York City in the United States. Another example was that my grandparents didn't eat with, like, forks. They ate with their fingers. And the custom was that the woman, the mother, would put all the food into her husband's dish, and then her husband would take some of the food and put it into her dish. In other words, he ate first, and she received what he chose to give her. The custom, you know, people thought that was totally absurd. Even my aunt Allegra followed that custom, one generation more. But actually, in the old days, you know, one of the concepts behind this custom was that the man was supposed to pick out the best pieces and the best parts of the food and give it to the woman.
You said that in that neighborhood there were a lot of people from the same background, from Salonika. Do you know if
Yes.
all the families did these things?
No, I don't. I don't know what they did. I only really know what my family did, mm-hmm. some of the things they did. And it was looked upon, you know, by my mother's generation, as I said, as being sort of being archaic. And so my grandparents also used a lot of proverbs. And this became like the butt of many jokes, because these proverbs were frequently satirical and ironic and et cetera. And so this became part of the story about my grandparents.
And these proverbs were in Ladino.
That he would use. Like one of the most popular proverbs he used was Cria cuervos y ticarán los ojos. Raise crows and they pick out your eyes.
Which is still a proverb used in Spanish.
Right. So, I mean, my grandfather used that about, like, his children all the time. So that was one of the things, these proverbs, some of these proverbs became part of the family stories. And my mother would repeat them to me, and we'd all have a terrific laugh. So it wasn't long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I started thinking about some of these proverbs. And I said to myself, as an artist, it would be an interesting challenge to take something with so few words and find a visual equivalent or interpretation, a visual interpretation of these proverbs, some of the proverbs my grandfather used.
Did you understand the meaning of the proverbs even though you didn't speak Ladino?
Well, I tried to intuit the meaning. Mm-hmm. I really have to say, you know, on the deepest levels, I don't know if I understand even now after years of study what the real meanings of these proverbs are, because proverbs are extremely complex. It was, I think, Cervantes who said, proverbs are short sentences drawn from long experience.
Hmm.
But what experience are they actually drawing from? For instance, raise crows and they will pick out your eyes. Well, who raises crows? Other crows. So it becomes, you know, these things have many, many levels. Some of them are very complicated. And so I really, in the beginning, I just tried to find some visual equivalent. That was hard enough. And then I had some of those published in a small magazine, and people seemed to like them. And I kept doing a few more and a few more, and it started to feel like this is an interesting process, and I need to know more. So I really began studying medieval Spanish history and the influence of the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians, how they lived together. And one of the most helpful books was a book by Americo Castro,
mm-hmm.
who was a Spanish historian. He wrote The Social Structure of Spanish Society. And he really got into some of the bases of proverbs and imagery. And in fact, you know, he said that it was the Muslims who brought the concept of using animals as symbols for humanity, which is very popular idea. For instance, raise crows and they will pick out your eyes. It was a very useful part of Spanish proverbial lore, is to use animals.
You know, but if you think about Aesop's fables, he did the
yes,
same thing.
Aesop was Ethiopian, but he wrote in Greek. So Anyway, as I started studying the language more and studying the history and the culture, and I collected proverbs from all over the world, Ladino proverbs, I started to sort of, how should I say it, live with all with these proverbs, and I decided I wanted to do etchings of these proverbs because they lent themselves to that. So I had to study etching, which I had never done.
What had you done before?
In terms of art?
Yeah.
Well, I've been a worker all my life, so I never went to art school. And what art I did either on weekends or after work. I was primarily a painter, and I did collages. But this project gave me an opportunity to learn printmaking. And I studied printmaking because I couldn't teach myself etching. It's very complicated. Mm-hmm. And started to look at printmakers like Goya, who used a process called aquatint mm-hmm. to make various shades of grays and blacks. And it's very complicated. It takes a very long time. And it's very demanding. And so I went to class and studied aquatint process and learned, and most of the 45 etchings in this book are aquatints. My style of painting was always sort of naive because I didn't learn to paint as if I were living in the Renaissance. I came up with a style of painting that was closer to the way I grew up and in Brooklyn and things like that, and the influences of my early life. And so I had sort of a whimsical and naive childlike style of working, which lent itself very well to the proverbs, which are also whimsical, childlike statements and sort of imaginative statements about life. So my style of drawing coincided very well with the subjects and the spirit of the words. So that was very fortunate for me. So I worked 3.5 years on this project, and as I kept going along, I understood more of the depths of the proverbs and how they might relate to my own life. And the whole book began to become a way of doing something for my ancestors and my family, in some way recalling to my nieces and nephews and my family what I remembered about my grandparents and what our ancestors had gone through. It's remarkable that our Sephardic Jews were able to maintain their culture for so many years in isolation from Spain. So as a result of studying and doing this work, I felt I was in some way paying back my ancestors and preparing the way for future generations to appreciate their history.
You said that you had collected Ladino proverbs from different countries. Did you find the same proverbs, or did you find any important differences?
Well, I found many more, and I found some differences, slight differences perhaps in the way they were not interpreted, because none of these books of proverbs don't usually have interpretations, mm-hmm. the way that they were written especially, because mm-hmm. Ladino was never a standard language. And so they were written, the actual sounds of the words, et cetera, were frequently written differently, and there was no standardization. And sometimes I would find variations, like in Turkey, there is an example I have here where the same proverb is reinterpreted. Yes, there were some small differences, but the important part of this was just getting enough proverbs to do pictures mm-hmm. because a lot of proverbs don't lend themselves to pictures. So I had to find enough for a book. And then I found so many that I could have kept going
Are you
for a very, very long time.
Are you planning to continue with this project and come out with another book?
Not right away. I've been doing other kinds of books where, in this case, I started with the words, but I just finished a book where for a year and a half I was doing prints that had no idea what the prints were about. And people would ask me, well, what is this print about? What is this picture about? And I didn't have any idea. I just kept doing these prints and doing more and more. But finally, I decided that I would try to put words to the prints. And when you have a picture, you don't really want to describe the picture, and you don't want to define the picture too closely, because mm-hmm. a picture has its own life. So it took me about a year and a half, and I wrote text for these 30 or so images. And then I put them together as two artist books. So I go back and forth between now working from text to picture, like I've been working on the pictures to the text of Prometheus by Aeschylus. Mm-hmm. And then I go back to doing pictures and then writing text. So that's one of my projects here.
We're starting to run out of time, but I would just like to ask you about the collaboration that you did on this book with Antonio Muñoz Molina, who's a very well-known Spanish writer.
Yes, in the process of doing this book, I met Antonio Muñoz Molina, who, of course, wrote the book Sefarad. Mm-hmm. And he was the director of the Instituto Cervantes. And he offered to write an essay for me for the book because he liked very much the concept and he liked the artwork. And he wrote a beautiful essay. Can I read you something from it?
If it's not too long?
Yeah, I'll make it fast.
Okay.
He said, "Our past, Marx and mine, are not only shared but equally irretrievable. Jews lived in the rural area where I was born until the spring of 1492. Their children sang the same songs in the street. The grown-ups tiresomely repeated the same sayings. The Catholic monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, did not deport a group of illegal immigrants who were visibly different from the local population in their language, dress, and customs. They expelled a part of their own country. People who had lived in Andalusian and Castilian towns for as many centuries as the Christian or Muslim population, people who were part of the local community and landscape. It was not only an injustice, it was an amputation." And I thought that was a beautiful remark because mm-hmm. history frequently doesn't have a face, you know, that human dimension. It happened, 55,000 or 60,000 people were expelled, and here he captured it in a very poignant way. And then in writing it myself in an essay, I tried to summarize what it meant for me or what it means for a person to say, I'm a Spanish Jew. This is what I wrote. "But the very fact that my grandparents spoke and my mother continues to speak Ladino and quote Ladino proverbs takes us back to medieval Spain. Un árbole sin solumbra, a tree without shade. Sephardic life in medieval Spain exists today like an ancient postcard whose images have over time been rendered invisible by the sun's rays. It was there. It was not there. It is here. It is not here." And I've been trying in some way, shape, or form to understand how the experience of being a Sephardic Jew has shaped my consciousness. And I guess that has been and still is the quest of this book.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Linda. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. A I'll leave you now with Savina Yanatou singing the Sephardic folk song Primavera in Salonico, Spring in Salonica, from the CD of the same name. See you next week.